The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Good day, everyone, and welcome again to another edition of Boomer Generation Radio. This is your host, Rabbi Richard Address, coming to you from the studios of WWDB here in Greater Philadelphia. And we're streaming live on WWDBAM.com. And once again, if you'd like to contact the show with ideas or comments, you can reach us at BoomerGenerationRadio@gmail.com or just send us a note on the Facebook page, Boomer Generation Radio on Facebook. So we are going to be have a very, very exciting and interesting show today. But first, we want to welcome again our sponsors from Kendall with this word.
Hi, this is Kendall staff member Sheila Sylvester. This portion of Boomer Generation Radio is brought to you by Kendall. Founded on Quaker principles, Kendall provides independent living, assisted living, memory support, skilled nursing, and rehabilitation care for older adults in 8 states. Whether you're looking for the intellectual and cultural stimulation of a college town or a big city, Kendall has a community for you. We are together transforming the experience of aging. To learn more, visit Kendall.org or call toll-free 888-759-0128.
Welcome back to Boomer Generation Radio, and we are joined, I hope, through the magic of technology and our producer, Tony. Asian Poo, are you there? Uh-oh. We're pushing buttons. Gotcha?
I can hear you, yes.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes. Hello. Right. You're somewhere in the on the East Coast in a hotel, I think.
I am in Washington, D.C., because I was just here for the White House Conference on Aging.
Ah, well, how did that go, by the way? First of all, let me introduce you. This is Asian Poo, the director of the National Domestic Workers Alliance and the co-director of Caring Across Generations, and the author of a great book, which I have referred many people to and mentioned it a couple of times on our Facebook page and my own personal JewishSacredAging.com, The Age of Dignity, subtitled Preparing for the Elder Boom in a Changing America. So you must have been very, very busy at the White House conference. So I'll tell you what, let's go right to that if you don't mind. I have a whole series of questions and stuff about the book and your work, but what was your reaction to the conference?
Well, it was really a privilege and an honor to be a part of the conference, and I thought that they were able, despite not having a lot of resources to do this conference, like past conferences have had, they did a really good job of incorporating the voices from people all over the country. And what I mean by that is this is really the culmination of a series of regional conferences that they've had around the country, engaging with local communities about their priorities and their hopes and dreams when it comes to transforming aging in this country. And so yesterday was a gathering of about 200 leaders from around the country, but it was also live streamed, and there were about 700 watch parties all over the country of people who wanted to engage and be a part of the conversation. So I think it was an important milestone in restarting a public conversation about how aging and caregiving and many other issues connected to aging well need to be a part of our public conversation and our national priorities in a new way. So I feel hopeful. I feel energized by all the people who came together, and I know that we actually have a lot of work cut out for us ahead.
Well, that goes without saying. I know we had a couple of weeks ago a couple of people here who attended one of the pre-session discussions here in Philadelphia that was held in the end of May, and they were very, very enthusiastic about the four levels or the four areas and the response. sold out at a local venue here, and then four other parties around the East Coast that was sponsored by the Kendall Corporation, which is our major sponsor here on Boomer Generation Radio. So The Age of Dignity, this is a great book. I'll be very honest with you. I read it not only for my own work as the director of Jewish Sacred Aging, but having lived this with my mom and had to go through the challenge of finding a home care worker to help out and come in, and the challenges with that, it hit home in a variety of ways. Right at the beginning, you talk about the fact that this elder boom, which we are very, very much a part of, especially our generation, my generation, the baby boomers, is a blessing as opposed to the, oh, my God, gloom and doomers. What do you mean by that?
Well, I really believe that, one, the reason why some people call the aging demographic shift the silver tsunami,
right,
or the age wave, and it has these connotations of a natural disaster. And I call it the elder boom, partly because it is directly tied to the retiring of, or the sort of aging of the baby boom generation. But it's also because I do believe that it's an opportunity, in the way that any boom could be an opportunity. And when I think about the baby boom generation as a generation that brought us social justice and movements and rock and roll and many, many levels of culture change in our country, I just feel incredibly optimistic about this generation's ability to lead a transformation in attitudes and norms and culture around aging in this country, a transformation from fear and denial to really embracing the joys and complexities and the possibilities of growing older. Because really, David Lloyd Pierce yesterday said this perfectly on a panel that I was on at the conference. He said, to age is to live, and to care is to be human. And I really believe that living longer, which is a part of this elder boom, our longevity, is the opportunity to live longer, to learn longer, to work longer, to connect longer, to love longer, if we put the right systems and supports in place. So it's really a matter of us really thinking ahead and putting into place the support for people to live longer, healthier, vibrant lives, which is really the blessing that is the elder boom.
Well, as a clergy person, I mean, we look at this not only as a blessing, but as a profound spiritual moment in people's lives, because there's so many really basic spiritual things that take place in these new life stages. And the challenge of really, what do you do with the time, God willing, that you are given? And
right,
this is an amazing opportunity, I think, if understood properly, as you're trying to do, to see great opportunities for creativity.
Yeah.
You write in the book about caregiving, and the thesis of the book really involves the opportunity or the challenges of caregiving, especially with home care workers. And you write about this wonderful line that caregiving is the most powerful expression of our human interdependence. And that seems to flow with what you just said on this panel. Could you just walk me through what do you mean by that? That's a wonderful, and I may, if with your permission, borrow it in workshops and stuff.
Please
like
do.
That. It's a brilliant line. Caregiving is the most powerful expression of our human interdependence. What do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean by that is that oftentimes caregiving is framed as a burden or a stressor. And really, all of us are either going to need care or have needed care in the past. The former First Lady Rosalind Carter said it best. She said there are only four kinds of people in the world: people who are caregivers or will be caregivers, people who need care or will need care. And really, the need for and the ability to give care is the most fundamental element of our humanity. It is the thing that defines us as having a capacity that is about humanity and the ability to connect to see someone else's humanity and do something to uphold their dignity and humanity. That is the fact that we can do that and we can choose to do that is an incredibly powerful capacity that we have. And if we allow it to define us, it can be one that opens up all kinds of possibility for human connection and growth and development. I mean, how else do we grow as people but through our connection to others and the human experience of others in our lives? That is the way that we express love. It is the way that we express connection. It's the way that we transform, and our connection to others helps to transform us and ultimately the other person as well. And I see caregivers every day, caregivers whose primary focus is really seeing the humanity and upholding the dignity of another human being. I mean, that is the work of caregiving. And what more human, with all of its complexities, what more human act than that? And so I think we should really embrace that role as core to being human and as a path towards sort of our realizing our highest potential as human beings.
Does this require a little bit of a cultural shift in America, in American psyche, to see caregiving in this very positive spiritual connectiveness? Because it seems to be to make a generalization, in the popular world and press, more sometimes portrayed more as a burden than as a blessing or as a privilege. And you're describing it as a privilege, which
it is. Yeah. And you know, I do think that there are a number of culture shifts that we have to make to fully realize the potential of this moment. You know, I definitely think that valuing caregiving and really understanding the critical role that it plays in our families, in our lives as human beings, in our ability to live well and have a good quality of life, and also in our economy, because if we think about it, caregiving is the work that really makes everything else possible. I mean, who are we but parts of families? And so we're so defined by our work in the economy, and the work of caregiving is unseen in the economy, but it is such an important precursor to everything else in the economy working. So I do think that there are a lot of cultural and norm changes that we have to facilitate in order to realize the potential of this moment. But I also, I'm starting to see it happening. More and more people are coming forward and saying, I'm a caregiver, and I'm proud to be a caregiver, and this is the richness that it's brought to my life. So I'm optimistic that we are already on the cusp of a change.
Well, I think you're right, because so many of our generation of the boomers are actively involved. Every time I go out and do a workshop in congregations on what I call the art of caregiving, and you ask that question, how many of you sitting here are or have been caregivers, almost every hand goes up, and the few that don't, everybody turns around and says, well, just wait, you will be. And I've seen congregations also take opportunities to honor caregivers at a service with a blessing, to really, because as you said, a lot of caregiving is done in splendid isolation.
Right.
But when the community values it and recognizes and bless it and actually creates a blessing, in our tradition we have these blessings, it raises the dialogue and it raises the level of the deed, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
We're speaking with Ajahn Poo, the director of the National Domestic Workers Alliance and the co-director of Caring Across Generations and the author of The Age of Dignity, subtitled Preparing for the Elder Boom in a Changing America, here on Boomer Generation Radio. WWDB AM 860 here in Greater Philadelphia, and we're streaming live on WWDBAM.com. Let's go back to the book for a second, because I really want to. This is such a it's jam packed with stuff. What if you could? This is I know perhaps a difficult question for early in the morning, and I don't know how much coffee you've had, but what's the thesis of the Age of Dignity? What some you know that that dreaded I hate that elevator speech.
The thesis is that this moment of demographic change is a huge opportunity for us to address some long-standing problems and challenges in our economy and in our caregiving systems. And, you know, when change happens, it is there's room, there's more room for new solutions, new protagonists, new stories about who we are and who we're becoming. And so what the book does is it puts forward a whole bunch of stories about caregivers and how important that relationship is, and also a whole bunch of new solutions. And one of the big solutions that I'm proposing is that we think about the new care system as an infrastructure project. We all know that in this country, for the electricity and the waterways and our transportation systems, that there's actually a whole bunch of infrastructure that we need to invest in. Well, I believe that given the fact that 10,000 of us are turning 65 per day and people are living longer than ever before, we need a new infrastructure for caregiving to support our family caregivers and our professional caregivers, to be able to then support our elders to age with a dignified quality of life, with plenty of choices to be able to stay in their homes and in their communities, and that that will catalyze a shift in our culture and in our systems such that we can actually stay connected and have a good quality of life across generations. So it's an opportunity to change a whole bunch about the way our culture and our systems work to better support families across generations.
This new life stage, which I really think it is, a caregiver, because, you know, we've always had caregivers, people taking care of other people. But as you point out, and as others have mentioned as well, the longevity revolution here in this country, this life stage can last, and we've all run into it, not only months or weeks or years, but I've run into, I'm sure you have too, people who are caregivers for a decade or more. And it really does, and it's a family systems issue. Go ahead.
It is. It absolutely is. I mean, what we're looking at here is that by the year 2030, 20% of our population will be over the age of 65. And by the year 2050, at least 27 million of us will need care and support and services to meet our basic daily needs. And the scope of the caregiving capacity that's needed in this country is so enormous that it really is an all-hands-on-deck situation. And we are going to have to really think of ourselves as a nation of caregivers.
Right, right.
That this is going to have to require a real team effort. In my book, I talk about moving from the superhero model of caregiving to the super friends model of caregiving, where we actually put together teams of professional caregivers and family caregivers and healthcare professionals and social workers, and really think about how we form care circles around the people we love and around ourselves, so that we can actually take this on as a super friends team effort, and really look to each other as community in the caregiving project.
You know, I know last in a recent Boomer Generation radio show, I think it was last week, on we interviewed a geriatrician, gerontologist up in northern New Jersey, Dr. Jessica Israel, who's creating in her hospital, in her practice, her geriatric practice, such a team of medical, social work, to really embrace and surround an individual. And I know the religious communities, in many churches and synagogues, I don't know about mosques, have really taken the lead because of the concept of the faith community in creating what we call caring communities that really attempt to support caregivers and individuals. Have you seen this begun to really grow more and more and more around the country in faith communities?
And I really do think communities of faith are on the leading edge of the culture shift that needs to happen in this country. The way that communities of faith have constructed multi-generational communities of care is exactly, I mean, really modeling what we need to create for the whole country. I finished my book tour in Hawaii, where the Buddhist community there has created Buddhist care circles called Project Dana, which is really about creating communities of care, neighbors helping neighbors, to make sure that all of the elders in the community, that they are connected and supported, and that they have what they need to live well and be fully integrated in the community. And I just think that really that and so many models of what I've seen in faith communities are the cutting edge. They're modeling what's possible and what we need to look towards.
You know, I know that there's an organization that I know of, CTAC, the Coalition to Transform Advanced Care, has also been pioneering through their interfaith coalition, their working group on diversity and spirituality, some major model projects around the country in Oakland and some other states and cities that involve a lot of the African American churches as direct service providers around these, creating, as you were calling it, circles of caring and caregiving. And it seems to be a very, very, you know, like you're saying, based upon existing models, based upon their concerns about faith and other people. You write about some unbelievable statistics too in the beginning of the book. You have one. This is 2015. We're halfway through 2015, and you have this note that's really a little jarring when you read it, that by 2018, the demand for home care workers will increase by 90%. That's 90%. And 2018 is not that far away. It's, what,
no.
A year and a half, 2 years.
Exactly.
So walk us through that.
Yeah. I mean, right now, the home care and personal care aid, the home care worker and personal care aid, these are the fastest growing occupations in our nation today, across every sector of the economy. And that's a direct reflection of two things. One, the incredible need, and the fact that there are so many people who require support and services. And two, the fact that people want to age in place and at home. 90% of our population would rather stay at home and connected to their families and communities as opposed to going to a nursing home. So this really is the future. Home and community-based services really are the future, and we need to invest in them in a different way. It is still the dominant model in this country to have institutional care be the main option for long-term care, and that's just simply not what people want, and it's not where the culture and, frankly, the quality of life and cost issues are really much better addressed in the home and community context. So the personal care aide and the home care worker growing in numbers, and yet they are still, the average annual median income for a home care worker in the United States is $13,000 per year.
Wow.
I don't know a single town in this country where you can survive, let alone support a family, on $13,000 per year. And yet so many hardworking caregivers, professional caregivers who go to work every day making sure that our loved ones have what they need to live well, are paid poverty wages. And that, to me, is one of the most unsustainable dimensions of this equation. We've got to figure out how, with the jobs growing at the rate that they are, the need as clear as it is, we've got to figure out how we transform these jobs into good jobs that you can take pride in and really support your family on. And because We want low rates of turnover. We want to attract the best caregivers into this profession. And we really need that stable, strong workforce of caregivers who can support our desire as a nation to age in place. So this is a big question that I talk a lot about in the book, and there are clear ways forward on this.
Right. And this is really because a lot of us have had to walk this walk, and we do so out of really it's in many ways a crapshoot. I need somebody. I have to bring somebody in to take care of my mom or my dad. I don't know where to go. I'll ask some people. The newspapers are filled now with, you know, call us and we provide the best home care, but there's minimums and this, that, and the other thing. So let's talk. I really want to focus in on this because this is really your passion, if I'm not mistaken, and going through the book, your calling to really professionalize, if that's the right word. You'll tell me if it's not the right word. But
it is. Mm-hmm.
You know, these workers to raise up a standard of living, because the implication, if I'm not mistaken, and it comes through in the book, is that if you professionalize this growing category of workers, that will mean better training, and that will eventually redound back to the individual family a better quality of care. Is that correct?
That's absolutely right. Quality of care and quality of these jobs, absolutely connected. We won't get to a place of quality care and the kind of outcomes we want in terms of quality of life for our loved ones if these jobs stay poverty wage jobs that people can't sustain in, where people are having to get on public assistance and piece together a living in the shadows. I mean, it's just not viable. So if we can figure out how we take this entire, I mean, you use the word crapshoot. I think that that's a perfect description. We often talk about it as the wild, wild west, where you just never, you're sort of on your own and reaching in the dark. You don't know what's happening. You don't know what you're going to get. It's hard to even find a caregiver sometimes. And it's because this entire workforce is really in the shadows, undervalued, unseen. If we are able to really see the potential of this workforce to be a part of the solution for families and for this economy in the future, as this demographic shift takes hold, there's so much that's possible, both in terms of lifting the workforce out of poverty and in terms of quality of care that we're able to receive, but also in terms of thinking about these other big questions we have, which is, how are we going to pay for health care in the future if 3/4 of our health care expenses come at older ages? If we can actually better manage chronic illnesses, really dig in on prevention for our aging population, really transform the culture of health for our aging population, and see this workforce as a key part of how we do all of those things, so much is possible. And so I just say that it's not just about what's right, and it's not even just about quality of care outcomes, but it's really about this workforce being a huge part of the solution that we're looking for in the future.
We're speaking with Ajahn Poo, the author of The Age of Dignity, Preparing for the Elder Boom in a Changing America, here on Boomer Generation Radio on WWDB AM 860 here in Greater Philadelphia, and streaming live on WWDBAM.com. And right after these messages from some of our friends here who make Boomer Generation Radio possible, I want to come back to exactly what our guest is talking about and pursue the how. We now heard the why we need to do this, but we actually really want to talk a little bit about how. One of the things that keeps coming up and is in some of the aspects of the Age of Dignity, especially in these wonderful appendixes at the end, is our own planning for our own financial future. And we want to make mention of one of our good friends here at Boomer Generation Radio, the Hecht Investment Group of Janie Montgomery Scott, who provides concierge financial consulting and planning services using a formal investment process as their foundation. We know that clients will receive frequent communication and rapid response to their questions. And as many of us know, there are no needs greater than our own when it comes to personal financial planning. The Hecht Investment Group provides experience, guidance, and an efficient management process that is important in today's environment. Additionally, Hecht and his team can assist you in connecting to this investment to their investment banking department, which specializes in assisting middle market companies to achieve their financial goals. We invite you to contact the Hecht Investment Group toll-free at 855-289-2168 or visit hechtinvestmentgroup.com. The Hecht Investment Group is also on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook, and Jenny Montgomery Scott is a member of the New York Stock Exchange, FINRA, and the SIPC. That's the Hecht Investment Group of Jenny Montgomery Scott, 855-289-2168. And now also a word from our very, very good friends and our major sponsor from the Kendall Corporation.
Hi, this is Kendall resident Harry Hammond. This portion of Boomer Generation Radio is brought to you by Kendall Outreach. Kendall Outreach serves the field of aging by raising public awareness of important health care issues of older adults. And it provides education and training in the development and implementation of comprehensive approaches to safe, individualized, long-term care practices. Kendall Outreach has been sharing Kendall's approaches to quality care with consumers, advocates, providers, government agencies, and related organizations since 1989. To learn more, visit KendallOutreach.org.
Welcome back to our second half hour here on Boomer Generation Radio, and we are joined by Ajahn Poo, the director of the National Domestic Workers Alliance and co-director of Caring Across Generations, and the author of this wonderful book, The Age of Dignity, Preparing for the Elder Boom in a Changing America. Before we move on, how does one get a hold of this book?
It's available on Amazon, at your local independent booksellers, on Powell's. It's really widely available. And there's also an audiobook version now, too.
Okay. Oh, that's great. It's, the New Press published it, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. Exactly.
So before we went to a little bit of a break, you mentioned the need to really professionalize the home care, health care worker. And the statistics that are emerging now, and so many people of having to deal with this. So I guess the next follow-up question is, well, how do you plan to do this? How do you visualize upgrading these workers, providing them with a living wage instead of $13,000 a year, which is, as you mentioned, is impossible? What are the plans? What are the organizations that you're involved with? How do you see this happening?
Great question. Well, so every state has the potential to raise wages for home care workers who are working through publicly funded programs like Medicaid. And by the way, there's a lot of myths out there about what Medicare covers in terms of long-term care. And the truth of it is that Medicare does not cover long-term care, except in very narrow circumstances. And so in terms of long-term care, the two ways that families are planning or able to pay for long-term care are either through, well, three ways. One is just paying out of pocket, which is very, very expensive for all who've tried. The second is buying long-term care insurance, and from people who buy it, the experience is that it's pretty expensive and oftentimes doesn't cover what you need when you need it, but it's better to have it than not, is what I've heard. And then the third way is through getting on Medicaid, and that would require not having any assets or income whatsoever. So you have to be very, very low income in order to be eligible for Medicaid. And so Medicaid does reimburse for home care in some states, and so you're able to incorporate higher wages in state budgets, state Medicaid budgets. So that's something that can happen through advocacy at the state level. And I know, for example, Massachusetts just achieved a $15 minimum wage for home care workers in the state of Massachusetts. So it absolutely can be done. Washington State has done the same thing. Washington State has also established a wonderful state-of-the-art home care training fund, training about 40,000 home care workers per year in the second largest educational institution in the state after the University of Washington. And it is a state-of-the-art facility that is training home care workers in 12 different languages, so to really provide cultural competence services to the people of Washington State. And as a result, Washington is one of the most prepared for the coming elder boom. So it is possible to really elevate wages and establish the kind of training that's needed in states, and some of these states are already underway. But I will say that there is a real need for a public demand for these kinds of programs, that we really need to speak up and speak out to our local elected officials and say, our state needs a plan for how we're going to support the long-term care needs of our citizens. And these other states are starting to put things in place. Our state should too. One really exciting development is in the state of Hawaii, where there is a proposal. It hasn't yet passed, but there is a proposal to create a new long-term care social insurance fund at the state level. So it would be a part of the state's local payroll tax deduction. And what it would mean is that Hawaiians who've paid into the system could actually utilize the funds to cover up to 365 days of long-term care services in either in their homes or at a nursing home context in a facility. So lots of choices there. And it would provide real economic support, which is what I'm hearing from families around the country is most needed.
Is there, in your experience as you're going around the country, is there a tension at all between a state which has limited funds? I mean, I live in the state of New Jersey, which is undergoing its own craziness about funding on a variety of different levels, from pensions to support for care in nursing homes. Is there a tension you're picking up between here's the state, it wants to take care of people, and the decision is, do we increase the state's allocation to support nursing home workers in nursing homes as opposed to workers who are dealing with the home care industry? Is there a tension there?
There is. In some cases, there is. I think that most states recognize that that we are trending towards home and community-based services. And the big challenge is that the nursing home lobby is actually a very, very powerful lobby. And so when it comes to lobbying for funding, there's a lot of muscle behind the resources going towards nursing homes over home and community-based services. But there has been an effort to do what's called rebalancing. Right now, our services are biased towards nursing home services, nursing home care, at about a rate of 70% over 70 to 30.
Mm-hmm.
And we think it should be reversed, that ultimately where we should be is should be 30% nursing home care, 70% in the home and community. There will always be a need for nursing home care, absolutely. And we should be working hard to transform nursing homes to be much more like home-like environments, to provide a sense of community and really move away from the kind of traditional institution-like nursing home. And we really do need to shift our systems towards home and community-based services. It's what people want. It's more cost-effective. And it really is about how are we integrating older people into our communities in a new way and creating age-friendly communities and cities as opposed to thinking about how we're going to isolate people.
Yeah, there's just a recent article in the Philadelphia Inquirer about a settlement dealing with this in the state of New Jersey. And again, you mentioned the nursing home lobby seems to have moved that in that direction. So that's why I wanted to raise the question of this tension, because if what you're writing about in the book and what we're seeing around and this desire to stay. I want to age and play. I want to stay home. I don't want to go into one of those places, as I'm sure you've heard that phrase. Is you keep talking about states. You write in the book about the need for a comprehensive federal policy of caring, as and that policy is not only a moral but a practical and economic necessity. Do you see the possibility of a federal law focusing on this, or is this really going to have to be fought on a state by state level?
I think it's a both and. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I say that is, you know, the main barrier to us getting to a federal solution is really the question of cost. And when I talk to people around the country, and I'm sure your listeners will really identify with this, when I talk to people around the country, they are already paying heavily for care. I mean, people are completely depleting their savings, bankrupting their children in order to pay for care. I mean, we're talking about people who really have saved. I mean, in Jane Gross's book, A Bittersweet Season, mm-hmm. she talks about her mother who had saved about $500,000, and that money was completely depleted by the need for care, such that she actually had to get on Medicaid. And so we are already paying heavily for the cost of care as private families, and we can't bear that cost alone. And there are, frankly, much more efficient ways to pay for care. We just need a sort of down payment on it in the form of public policy. And so I think that, and then when I think about the cost savings in the healthcare system, I mean, what better prevention than good care, right? When people are getting the care they need as they become more frail, and we're able to prevent falls, we're able to better manage chronic illnesses, I mean, that is going to save the healthcare system billions of dollars. So I think we need to take the long view here, and we don't really have a choice because this moment really requires a different level of planning and public policy innovation. But I think we can get there. And I also think that states can play a critical role in catalyzing that kind of change by demonstrating that it's possible. By Hawaii taking a lead and saying, you know what, we're going to establish a pooled fund at the state level so that care can be more affordable for everyone, and showing that it's possible, I think that that can be a part of catalyzing the kind of need we need, the kind of change we need at a federal level. And finally, there are 100 million of us who are directly affected by the need for care in this country, by the need for a real solution. When you add up all of us who are caring for aging family members and family members with disabilities, plus the professional caregivers, plus those of us who are living in multi-generational homes, it comes to about a third of the country that's directly affected by this issue. That's a powerful force for change if I've ever heard of one. So I really think that anything is possible if we create the kind of public outcry and momentum that's needed to make it happen.
Well, I know part of that outcry and momentum is coming from, in essence, this unbelievable fact that you allude to it in the book, and I've seen it all over the place now. The expected, as the boomers age out, the expected rise in dementia and Alzheimer's, the yes. need for very specialized care that a lot of families, you know, the spouse or the adult child cannot provide. And the fact that realistically there just aren't enough caregivers, qualified, trained caregivers, to take care of the boomers in these situations as we age out. That seems to me the, you know, I guess the word crisis, is that an appropriate word to use?
It is. It is. It is by far the most poignant and painful stories that I've heard are of family caregivers who are really struggling to manage care for parents with Alzheimer's. And I'm sure many of your listeners, I mean, it is the boomer generation that's doing this family care work right now for their parents with Alzheimer's. And it is by far one of the most important capacities that we need to be building. We need to support caregivers who have family members with Alzheimer's and other dementias. We have to support both professional caregivers and family caregivers with training, with respite care, with paid family leave, with all of the things that account for how difficult it is to really support people who are living with Alzheimer's and dementia. And that is why a big focus of our training at the Domestic Workers Alliance is really training caregivers to specialize in the most cutting-edge treatments for people living with Alzheimer's and other dementias, everything from music therapy, personalized music therapy, to gaming and special exercise. I mean, really, there is a whole body of very innovative and experimental treatment and prevention strategies for people with Alzheimer's and dementia, and I think that caregivers are going to be a key to us really taking on this illness.
Do you think there's a need, or do you see the possibility in the next couple of years of the development of an actual class in caregiving, where a family member, perhaps knowing what may be coming down the road, can go to a community college or a family service agency or their religious institution and take a six-week, just brainstorming this out, a six-week class on how to be a caregiver?
Yes. In fact, we are developing that at Caring Across Generations as we speak, and we're hoping to launch it sometime in 2016. But yes, absolutely. Putting together, and we're thinking about it as an online course because caregivers are so stretched in terms of time,
mm-hmm.
As an online course to really provide a suite of resources and information to caregivers and also a community of other caregivers who are struggling with many of the same things. I started to do that in the appendices in my book, but there's so much to cover, so much ground to cover. Even a little discussion guide about how to have the conversation at your family dinner table about how we prepare as a family for our future caregiving needs has been incredibly useful for people around the country. And so there's just the possibilities are limitless in terms of resources that could be helpful, and we're trying to pull all those together.
Well, I know we've talked about here several times the development of the need for families to develop a care plan. Where actually, you know, who's going to be responsible for what, especially in the case of an emergency, who's going to take care of this or who's going to take care of that, of their children, who's going to be responsible to take care of these children, what I've run into this as a clergy person within the real world, but also with people on the show who've really spoken to the need for this. You know, the financial planning is there, but rarely is there a care plan. You mentioned the indices, the appendixes in the back of the book that are really very, very powerful and very, very essential. There's everything from a guide to hiring, I think on page 190, a guide for hiring professional caregivers, which is really brilliant. I mean, it's just plain and simple. Here's a few things to talk about or think about when you're about to do this, and tips. Very important. We've run across this. I've had docs and geriatricians on the show who've talked about how to make your home safe from falling, little tricks that you can do. There's a list of that in the back of your book. This is why the book is so very, very important, even in a curriculum itself. Could you just also talk about the caring across generations? You mentioned that you're working on this class for caregiving, just because we're just about 10 minutes away from ending, having to end. So the caring across generations that you're co-director of, how is that working? What is it doing? What is its major focus?
Great. Thank you for that. Yes, Caring Across Generations is a national movement to put into place the supports and systems that can support caregiving in the 21st century. And so we're doing everything from culture change work, really developing storytellers who can tell their stories about caregiving, both the joys and the complexities of it, to advocacy at the state, local, and federal levels for policy change that can really support caregivers. And we want to encourage everyone to join, to sign up on our website, which is caringacross.org, and to get involved, because this is going to require all of us really taking this up and taking the conversation about caregiving from one that's been hidden behind closed doors, really seen as sort of an individual family struggle, and making it a key part of every public conversation about the future and about public policy in the United States. This is one of the key questions that we need to address, and we want to make sure that all of the diversity of experiences with care, whether you're a family caregiver, a professional caregiver, or a senior yourself, that your voice is a part of how we shape the solutions for the future. And Caring Cross Generations is the community that we've created to really be that force for change.
So you talked just briefly about the diversity aspect, and in the work that you do, you allude to this in the book, but in, as you travel and you go across, how challenging is it to be sensitive to the various cultural diversities that exist in the United States of America and caregiving? There is no one-size-fits-all, correct?
You know, there is no one-size-fits-all. But what I will say, so to that point, we really do need to ensure that caregivers of all ethnicities who speak all different kinds of languages and all walks of life are supported and trained and have what they need to provide care in their communities and for their loved ones. So we do need to look at how our aging population is also diversifying, and therefore our care needs will be diverse as well. So it's not just about the different kinds of chronic illnesses and conditions and disabilities that we need to figure out how we support, but it's also about cultural competency. So that's very important, but what I've realized is that at the end of the day, if we focus on quality of life and supporting the dignity of whomever it is who needs the extra support, and supporting that person's ability to live life on their terms through the ages, right, as they age, that is a universal thing that everyone wants. And there are some pretty intuitive ways of really tuning in to what that is for people. And so just really moving away from a medicalized approach that is about the delay of death, but really tuning into what people need as human beings to feel like they are seen, that they are whole, and that they have dignity. And that is something that's universal.
Well,
and that is, I think, what should really anchor how we think about caregiving for the future.
I think part of that cultural shift that we talked about at the beginning of the show is part of this. This really movement from the medical or mechanical model to the holistic person-centered model.
Exactly.
And that's a challenge. I mean, it's a challenge for the medical community. We've had, you know, docs on here, and it's a struggle for them. And I think that's why the faith communities may have, as you alluded to before, a leg up on some of this, because
yes,
most of us come to this as we understand there's a human being there. It's not just a disease, but there's a whole universe of experience that's
exactly
brought to bear here. Somebody wants to get involved before we start running out of time. Somebody wants to do something. They say, this is something that touches me personally, because a lot of this is emanating from personal experience. How do I get involved? I want to get involved with this program, this project. How do I do this?
You can send a message to my email, which is aijen@domesticworkers.org. Or you can go ahead and sign up at www.caringacross.org. www.boomerfest.org.
And that gets me what?
And that gets you onto our list, which sends out regular information about ways to get involved and get active.
Mm-hmm. And once again, give us that information.
www.caringacross.org or IGEN, A-I-J-E-N, at domesticworkers.org.
So we're running out of time, sadly, because there's still tons of more stuff from the book and what you're working on. But in the concluding couple of minutes, let me ask you to just walk me through some very, very simple suggestions. We have people who may be listening who are beginning this struggle. It can be overwhelming. What are the things, and you allude to this in the book, somewhere around page 56, I think. What are the five things that a family caregiver must master? What are the things that, when I'm about to enter this journey, what do I need to do?
Well, first, have a conversation with your family. And, you know, any time is a good time to have this conversation. And, in fact, the best time is to have it when you're not in a crisis moment, but to have a conversation as a family about how we can prepare for our future caregiving needs as a family and what might be the joys and possibilities of caring for one another across generations. And having that kind of conversation from a place of planning and possibility as opposed to crisis management. I also think it's important to, if you can, explore care managers and other social work resources in your area, in your community. The role of a care manager is really, really critical. They can provide some really helpful information to help your family develop a plan.
Okay. So the care manager, real quickly, that's a real growing profession, is it not?
It is, and thankfully so, because we need that help.
So we have been speaking with, and again, I really want to thank you for your time. This has been wonderful. I wish you nothing but success, and keep up the fight, and hopefully more successes will come, as I'm sure they will. We've been speaking with Ajahn Poo, the author of The Age of Dignity, Preparing for the Elder Boom in a Changing America, a book that you really should get a hold of from your local bookstore or Amazon. She's the director of the National Domestic Workers Alliance and the co-director of Caring Across Generations. Thank you very, very much. Again, continued success to all of you today. Take care of yourself. Have a great week, and we'll see you next week on another edition of Boomer Generation Radio.